Chapter 3. A Goddess with a Spear in Her Spine. Ulien. The crew of the warhound Hindara were proud of their efforts. Ascending to the inner palace was no easy feat, with the dust killing any attempt to bring in sarcophagus ships, and the fallen sections of the ultimate wall offering a kilometers-high tectonic landslide of rubble, far beyond the limits of most Titan stabilizers. The first few god machines that had made it up into the districts of the inner palace were confronted with a wasteland of bombarded marble where their isolated titans were the tallest things standing. Whole regions of bastions, castles, spires, and colonnades lay in ruin, hammered to powder from orbit or overrun by the hordes of the War Master's infantry and armor support that had already poured into the inner palace. The titans of the Martian Mechanicum lacked the luxury of such swiftness. As they began to arrive, few loyalist titans met their cautious advance. Most of them circled the remaining bastions or had run for the safety of the Sanctum Imperialis. Hindara and her crew were in the first wave to make it up the avalanche of the ultimate wall. One breach among dozens, it was a vast slope of broken rock between them and the vindication they craved. They took several days trying step by step, forcing stabilizers and compensators and gyro balancers into the crimson, until Hindara's reactor was breathing fusion at their backs. Then they'd stop, letting the iron fire cool, letting their tech priests soothe the machine spirit, before trying the next steps when the readings were out of the red. Other titans retreated to their coffin ships, resolving to airlift onto the plateau. Few met with any success, with the dust chewing through engine intakes and crippling most of the landers that made the attempt. Some unleashed their weapons on unbreached sections of the wall, melter-boring rockcrete, atomizing stone and conversion-beaming holes through Rogel Dawn's greatest defences. Time. Time, time. It all took time. All while the defenders fell back to the fortifications of the Palatine Ring. Many titans attempted the climb. Every step had to be calculated and estimated in equal measure, with each titan's void shields lowered to push power elsewhere. Ground teams, the few Skitari infantry units that could still be trusted not to rush ahead in the hunt for kills, did what they could to clear patches in the landslides for huge clawed feet to slam down. On Hindara's ascent, she'd fallen twice. The first was a simple slip early on, a miscalculation in stabilizer compensation, sending them toppling forward. As dangerous as it was, forward was the safest way to fall. Moderatus Otesh had moved with cold clarity at her controls, hammering down the dragging leg at an oblique angle with enough force to punch through loose rock and keep them in place for the precious second she needed to swing Hindara back to stability. The crew had cheered her for that. Even other titans, those near enough to see Hindara's silhouette in the dust, had voxed their appreciation, or, in some cases, their mockery. The broken communication web allowed, just barely, for some of it to even make sense. The second fall was worse. Close to the top, after days of slow progress, the boulder scree gave way beneath them, just as it had for so many others. The reactor roared with the machine spirit's frustration, and in truth its fear, as it all happened excruciatingly slowly. The grind of rock, the whine of straining iron, and the disgustingly serene tilting as they started to go over. Hindara toppled sideways and backwards, its stabilizers squealing as they were relieved of all pressure. The crew knew they were dead. Falling from this high up on the avalanche was death. Even if they survived, which was unlikely, and even if their Titan didn't smash itself to pieces in the tumbling roll, which was even less likely, Hindara wouldn't be craned back to her feet for weeks, if ever. There was nothing resembling that kind of coordination and organization left in the war. The crew knew all of this, had borne it in mind every step up the avalanche, and it flashed to the fore in each of their minds as they started arcing backwards. The rocks ground and rumbled, sliding, sliding. Ahead of them, disappearing in their tilting eye windows, was the Mortis Reaver Vercanarix, She was even closer to the top, surrounded by a small horde of labourer tech thralls working around their god machine's heels. It had taken her more than a week to get there. The words spilled from Princeps Ulian Gruner's mouth, without thought and without care. Not shouted, not panicked, just a whisper, breathy with instinct.
Fire the Ursus Claw!
Moderati Secundus Himar Kul had a half-second to balance the rolling fire-arc figures against his own guesswork. He moved Hindara's arm by muscle memory, with no time to lock the firing braces down, and squeezed both triggers. The cockpit shuddered with the kickback of his blind fire. Hindara whined as her arm socket took the brunt of an unbraced release. It all happened within the span of half a dozen heartbeats, from slippage to claw fire. But the timing made no difference. They could have had a day to decide. It didn't matter. There was only one thing to fire at. Their harpoon took Varkanarix in the back. Another 5 meters higher, a single second later, and it would have missed completely. The three-taloned Ursus Claw lanced through the Reaver's rear carapace armour, where the composite plating of adamantium, plasteel and ceramite was thinnest. It buried itself with a thundercrack, driving deep into the god machine's internals, reducing two tech priests to a spread of gory debris in the engine room. It had missed the Thetis reactor that served as the Titan's heart, instead punching all the way through to the industrial pillar of Vercanarix's spinal column. The great claw snapped shut around a fistful of sacred mangled metal and locked hard with the activating clangs of magromagnetic binding. Vercanarix ceased all locomotion. For a moment, the towering god engine stood facing the ascent with almost philosophical calm. In her shadow, Skitarian servitors stood aghast, unable to believe the scratched lenses they had instead of eyes. They were worshippers at the feet of divinity, and their goddess had just taken a spear in the spine. Hindara jerked. She buckled. She started turning at a wild obtuse. Both Moderati worked their controls, white-knuckled and teeth-clenched, steering as best they were able to bring the legs back into alignment.
There's nothing to stand on. It's going out from under us. Nothing to stand on.
This from Moderatus Otesh.
No,
Princeps Ulien was mouthing. The lone word a silent chant.
No, no, no.
1 foot crashed down. Rock shivered under them, shuddered harder, then kept slipping. The other foot smashed down, then the first again. They staggered on the rock, unsteady as a wounded wolf. Motors revved in the Warhound's harpoon arm as her crew hauled on the anchored Ursus Claw for stability. Blessed iron screeched in Hindara's shoulder as her socket stretched and warped with the strain. That was when Varkanarix screamed. The Reaver let loose with her warhorn, crying out above the rumble of the avalanche. In that moment she sounded pathetically, horrifyingly alive.
We're stable.
Moderatus Kool's laugh was hollow with disbelief.
We're stable.
And he was right. Hindara settled, her joints whining down as their protests ceased. The cockpit no longer lurched. They were stable. The Carnarix turned towards them. Started to turn, at least. The wreckage of her spine wouldn't allow it. She would never complete that turn, just like she'd never walk again, never wage another war. Her turn became a tilt, and the tilt became a fall. Varkanarix gave another warhorn scream, the last shriek of a betrayed godling. She vented plasma from her carapace slits, uselessly breathing poison fire into the filthy air. In an act of either mindless panic or naked spite, she opened up with her cannons, her arms pouring forth volleys of blinding laser fire that echoed like thunder. With her dying cannonade, she liquefied her own worshippers and burned the rocks around her to black glass.
Detach! Ulien ordered. She's going over, detach!
They couldn't detach. The Reaver was going to take them with her if she fell down the landslide. They'd save themselves only to doom themselves, and Hindara couldn't detach. Kul tried the levers again, tried the triggers again, and again, and again. The macromagnetics had unbound, the grip had eased, but the claw was still buried in Varkanarix's ribs. They'd punched too deep.
Blow the lynchlocks!
Kul hadn't needed the order. He was already doing it.
Hindara's reactor flared at the insult as power ran hot to her extremities. Bang, 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 went the emergency failsafe charges in her shoulder, detonating the lynch locks attaching the claw launcher to her body. She amputated her own arm just in time. Vakanarix hammered down onto the rock slide, impacting face first and instantly killing her own crew. The immense weight of her body striking the rubble shook the earth and set another landslide in motion. Boulders rolled on that tide of flowing gravel, flowing down the kilometers-high slope. Further down, titans of various legios, each abraded of their paint jobs by the ashy air and suffering with degraded scanners, ponderously moved aside or braced as best they could. It was far from the first such rubble tide. Through the useless spray of static and scrap code, Hindara's crew heard voices damning them and lauding them for their treacherous survival. One of them stood out above the others, a wet crackle that identified itself as Telum Aya. She was a Mortis warhound, close enough to see the shadow play in the dust, and she raged at Hindara. Moderatus Otes shook her head. She was still pale with receding panic. "They'd fire on us if they could." But they couldn't. Telum Aya was too far back down the slope, likely on ground too unstable to risk weapons discharge. Ulien listened to their raving as her heartbeat slowed to normal. She felt the chill of what she'd done, but her discomfort didn't reach the level of guilt. All order was gone from the War Master's forces anyway. As long as they could stay ahead of any other Mortis engines, there would be no repercussions. There was barely any hierarchy to answer to now. Since the wall fell, it was every god machine for itself.
"This is Princeps Ulien of Ordex. I speak for Hindara."
She had no idea if her transmission would reach Telum Aya, but in the absence of guilt was reawakened pride. She didn't appreciate being spoken to in such a manner. Telum Aya replied. More anger, paved thick with promises of retribution. Ulien let it play out like background music for a time, baring her bloody gums in a smile, then sent back a clipped reply of her own to terminate the link.
"Engine kill."
Their brush with death close to the top of the breach had been 2 days ago. Since reaching the summit and striding through the breach, Hindara had stalked amidst the ruined districts of the inner palace, engaged in hour upon hour of hard fighting. She joined up with Legionis Astartes' forces, besieging Meru Bastion, and, battling one-armed, she'd helped bring down walls and destroy enemy tanks with volleys from her turbolaser. Few Legio Ordax resupply vessels had made the journey past the ultimate wall, isolating them in the vanguard. The truth was, Hindara had been in the field for months since her first deployment on Terra's surface, and she'd seen better days even before her amputation. Incidental damage was adding up, and more serious wounds were rotting through her iron bones as they went untended. The night before, as Meru Bastion fell, a nasty twist of fortune sent a missile pounding into the side of Hindara's head. It struck the moment her voids failed, scarring her cockpit with scorch marks, damaging several control systems, and splitting the reinforced glass of her eye windows. They were riven with cracks as complicated as cobwebs, further ruining her crew's already ash-limited vision. She marched with a hitching stride now, the joints in her right leg fouled by damage from Loyalist cannon fire. She had to conserve her energy too, her void shields no longer lit upon command, and with the pain of her injuries playing through her nerve cables, her crew kept her reactor banked to quieten her increasingly erratic machine spirit. Each of the Palatine Bastions were fortress towns in their own right, ringing the Sanctum Imperialis in a boundary. Meru Bastion had been the ugliest, a brutal castle of a thing. Old data spurts painted it as a palace, but any beauty it once possessed was lost when Rogal Dorn layered it over with rockcrete and ceramite and left its walls with hives of anti-infantry turrets. Tearing it down was a pleasure. Another of the Loyalists' strongholds dead on the inexorable march to the Sanctum Imperialis. There had been no sign of the Primarchs for days. Not the Angel of Fire that Angron had become, not the creature that was supposed to have once been Mortarion. Perturabo was said to have abandoned the siege,
but Ulien still saw masses of iron warriors within the horde, so who knew what was true there? Crackling transmissions from orbit promised Horus's landing was imminent, and Ulien considered those chanted promises no better than propaganda. She focused on the war before her, not the prayers coming from above. Avalon Bastion was next, its battlements a dark blur on the horizon. Word across the scrambled Vox was that the enemy were in full retreat now. Without organized reconnaissance, no one could be certain, but the few officers still relaying orders promised that Avalon was already deserted. Its defenders had fled in a refugee tide over the course of many days, running for the other bastions. Hindara's spirit was impatient, psychosomatically jabbing inside Ulien's mind with dull red throbs. Her crew had to keep her reactor muzzled to prevent her warrior soul forcing them to charge out of cohesion. For now, World Eaters and Death Guard and Alpha Legionnaires ran before Hindara in a Ceramite flood. No gunships backed them up from above. The air support phase of the war was adamantly over. But the beetle shapes of Legion tanks broke up the ranks of infantry, and winged things soared through the dirty sky. Red-skinned things in the shape of men and women, bloated things in the shape of alien flies, things that Hindara's crew called demons, glad of the layers of armour separating them from the creatures. Her eyes always slid away from the things the moment she tried to look at them. As soon as she looked away, she forgot they were there. The Horde had the numbers to bring about the war's end, while the defenders only possessed the numbers to delay it. But the losses were going to be grotesque. Ulien didn't want to die for the Emperor's stubbornness. She wanted to live, to see the War Master's ambitions come to fruition. She wanted the Imperium that Horus had promised. An empire for eternity. A kingdom of humanity that would never fall. Hindara grumbled, sensing her princeps' unease, but too drugged by her cooled reactor to do anything more. There it was again. The treasonous little notion Ulien couldn't quite shake. Horus was a hero, the War Master of the Imperium, the pacifier of the galaxy. Of course she'd followed him. The Legio Ordax had willingly worn his colours and cast their fate with his. But what would be left after this war? What would be left of Terror and the armies fighting to take it? Surely even now, quiescent alien kingdoms at the Imperium's edges were reawakening, daring to cast jealous eyes at the worlds they'd lost in the Great Crusade. Would there be enough of the War Master's hosts left to hold the Imperium in its entirety? And what would those hosts look like, with all order and discipline and humanity raked out of them? The Legiones Astartes were already blood-maddened and fighting by the side of those things. The regiments of Imperial Army wearing the War Master's eye were no better. Ulien Gruner didn't want peace. Peace was boring. Peace was for the weak. She wanted wars she could win. And the Mechanicum, blessings upon its name, was turning on itself, speaking in shrieking cants of scrap code. Raving prophets advocated the abandonment of the self, immersion within the manifold, fusion with the machine spirit. Conflicting philosophies from cults that had never agreed on anything before, but at least had the restraint to keep out of each other's ideologies. Now they screamed with a kind of scattered unity, praying for the sacrifice of flesh and soul to be reborn in cradles of holy iron. Hindara wanted it too. Ulien could feel that. For now, Hindara waited, and the woman serving as the god machine's mind stared at the armoured tide rolling ahead towards the silhouette of distant battlements. This was the first moment of stillness Ulien could recall in a long, long time. For months now, her physical world had been wholly within the confines of Hindara's cockpit. She escaped it only by blending her senses with her engines, living through its eyes and its guns, feeling Hindara's movements as her own. When had Ulien last breathed fresh air, instead of the sweaty reek coming out of the filtration slits behind her head? When had she last drunk anything but the recycled piss of her closest comrades? When had she last moved from her control throne? Ulien breathed in, catching the smell of her own shit. Her output filters had failed. When? Days ago? Weeks ago? Her legs were caked with her own waste. Her uniform was patchy with vomit that stank of stale nutrient paste. Once noticed, the stench of the various filths crusting her to her throne was omnipresent, practically overwhelming. Blearily, she caught sight of her arm. Her hand was a black claw, fused to the metal of...
My princeps?
Jolted from her reverie, she turned her gummy eyes towards Otesh.
Madaratus, she acknowledged. Sands of Mars, but she was tired. So damn tired.
Awaiting your order, my princeps.
Ulien stared at her crewmate. Otesh was carrion, her skin sick and sunless, her eyes dry. Ulien could smell her now, too, the spoiled meat sweetness of her. She'd been dead at least a week, even before they'd attempted the climb. At some point before she'd died, the Moderatus had bitten through her own tongue. Flies were growing fat on her face, crawling in and out of her open mouth. Ulien opened her eyes, or closed them. The dream stopped, or perhaps started again. She wasn't sure which, nor was she sure if it really mattered any more.
My princeps?
Otis said again.
You're dead,
Ulien said, or thought. She couldn't tell if she was speaking or thinking. Even banked, Hindara's reactor was pressing at the back of Ulien's mind, a constant pressure right in the grey meat of her skull.
Are you dead, Otesh? My princeps?
Ulien heard the words, or imagined hearing them. They were spoken by Otesh, or by the thing wearing Otesh's skin, or they weren't spoken at all. Ulien felt wet warmth on her face. She was weeping, or she was bleeding from her eyes again.
Walk,
she said, closing her hands around the arms of her control throne. She felt and heard her gloves creak. She was still wearing them. Her hands weren't black claws melded to the metal. They weren't. They weren't, though she couldn't bring herself to look to make sure.
We walk. Advance with the Horde.
Hindara rattled and clanked her way forward. The pressure eased just a little in Ulien's head. The smell of foulness receded. The Warhound's remaining weapon arm came up. Her stride, though hitched, became a loping run. The ground shook as they began outpacing the infantry. They were charging through the ranks of creatures, half hidden in the dust, that it hurt to look at. So Ulien kept her eyes on the walls. Spires were appearing through dusty mist, blunted by bombardment. Fallen battlements, ruined defence turrets. If Avalon was truly abandoned, that meant a spillage of refugees and retreating soldiers in the expanses of no man's land between here and the Eternity Gate. To Hindara it meant prey. The god machine's soul urged its commander with a somatic nudge through their tangled linkage. Ulien's skin prickled. She parted her lips and blood made strings between her rotten teeth. The walls of Avalon Bastion grew taller, darkening, resolving, and then... something new. Above the battlements a lone star shone in the blandness of the ashen sky. Through the iron of her titan's bones, Ulien could hear the legionaries cheering, chanting at her feet, calling out to Hindara, to Horus, to the creatures in their midst... and to Angron. Angron! Angron! The newborn star started to fall, trailing a tail of fire.